It's the Real Estate Podcast, brought to you by ANZ Home Loans for financial well-beings.
Hey, welcome back to another episode of the Real Estate Breakfast. Hope your weekend is going well as we deliver you the very latest in property news every morning. Of course, we are doing that 7 days a week, as heard on iHeartRadio, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Amazon. And it's the 28th day for April, another Sunday, just 4 more days until we reach May. And it's been another busy week. It kicked off on Monday when we spoke with architect Shannon Battison about the complexities of sustainable design and living that can offer homeowners sustainable energy savings. And that is always a big ticket item to save on. Stephen Devine was here talking about, well, you know, just the fact that maybe some real estate agents, it's a little bit too much about them. People look at million-dollar listing TV shows and they think that that is reality when it isn't. We also had this very interesting conversation with Yugi and David Bromley about an old jail that they bought back in 2018. And we find out a little bit about the story, how they transformed it into a museum, but that is now up for grabs and for sale. And Mario Volpe in Dubai was here talking about the flooding that took place the previous week. And, you know, global warming, this is a very good example of how it is reaching to all corners of the planet. Dubai would only rain 3 or 4 times a year. I mean, it's the desert, but that is now changing. And this week we also caught up with Jemima Clegg and we were talking about the housing affordability report from ANZ and CoreLogic. So that is all coming up in just a moment.
Gain insights with exclusive conversations from real estate professionals about buying, selling, and investing across Australia.
There is absolutely the preconception, and I would say misconception, that sustainable design, sustainable living costs more to build. But I think that it's not actually necessarily true. So much of what is sustainable is actually shouldn't cost you anything extra. But also, I think we need to think about the fact that we can't really afford not to do it. I think that our planet is telling us around us that we're really at a point where we're struggling. And so we need to find a way as a whole society to get these measures into our houses now so that our planet, you know, stops this incredible kind of degradation that's happening.
Just how switched on these days are people when it comes to sustainable housing and just as important that whole sustainable living?
More and more home buyers are getting really switched on to the benefits of it, but I think that we've got a really long way to go. I live in a new suburb and so much of what gets built and sold around us is really selling all the different things. So having, you know, lots of bedrooms and multiple living spaces and a covered alfresco and all those things, which are great to have in a house, but actually don't make a massive difference to how much energy you use in living in a house and actually how healthy a house is to live in. And one of the things that we really like to focus on with clients, whether we're building a new house or renovating an old house, is really creating spaces and creating a space that is happy and healthy to live in. And a huge part of the measures that we put in to make a house also be sustainable and low energy use actually happen to have massive health benefits and psychological benefits for the people who are living in it. You think about living in a house that's, you know, really dark all the time and always really cold and you don't quite relax ever. And it can have a really big impact on your mental state and it can have an impact on, you know, how easily you live within a house. And so all of these things we really need to be concentrating more and more on when it comes to buying a house. As you walk through it, don't just notice, you know, a tick list of things that are in it, but also notice where do the windows face? What are you looking out into? Is there sunshine coming in? All those things actually make a house so much healthier to live in.
Yeah, we can call that psychology performance within a house. I just made that up, but that sort of sounds kind of right, doesn't it?
I'll use it from this point forward.
Well, yeah, and the other thing, I mean, that whole psychology, I mean, I can never understand why people buy on busy roads. So to your point, if you've got a dark property and maybe one that isn't facing north on a very busy road, I mean, you'd be going out of your mind in 6 months.
It's an interesting thing, isn't it? I grew up under a flight path in Sydney, and we would regularly, you know, conversations would stop when an aircraft came in to land, and the noise just kind of took over and the conversation would keep on going as soon as it passed over and none of us really noticed it. But when it comes to certain noises, particularly road noises, it can be really, really disruptive and really damaging. And so it is worth looking at what's around the house. The house might be beautiful or have something, you know, that you really are looking for in your property, being it something on a, you know, a tick list, but have a look at what's around it. One of the things I found really surprising as I've got older is that I never thought I would live in a new suburb. And we moved out to a new suburb temporarily because it's where we could afford to build a really high performing, low energy use house. And I've stayed because it's full of parks and other families, and my children play in the street with our neighbours. Whereas in the older suburb where we were one of the few young families there. And so I think one of the things that we need to do more of is actually zoom out a little bit, look at what's around the house and what else is adding to your enjoyment of living there.
I think the whole changing nature of the industry from, you know, the focus now on the egos of the agents have really changed dramatically. You look at Lux listing, $1 million listing New York, it's all about the agent. It's not real. And it's I think it's got away from the human connection that we need to have with our buyers and our sellers and focus too much on that. But look, hey, you know, I'm transitioning out of the business, so maybe I'm not the right person to be speaking to in regards to social media, but certainly I know it has its place. It certainly plays a big part and will continue. But I do fear sometimes about the egos of some of the agents that are putting themselves out there.
Yeah, I think that, you know, from a younger person's point of view when they decide to come into the industry, because I note that you speak at real estate or have done at real estate training events and seminars throughout Australia as well as overseas, and you also sat on the industry advisory board of Domain. Here's the rub, you know, you've got younger people coming in wanting to be agents, and they look to what is being portrayed on television, social media with the, you know, it's all about me, as you say, the ego. And I think for a lot of younger people, they just sort of look at this as the norm, the standard to sort of try and attain.
Correct. And that's the problem. It's more about the look and how they, you know, what car they drive. It's not about the substance that's behind it, about the skill. And I think that's an art that's been lost these days, is the skill in the negotiation. How do you rationalize a buyer's thinking? How do you rationalize a vendor's thinking? And I think it's an art that I think is going away, based largely on this growing trend of, you know, people watch $1 million listing New York and think that I can make one phone call, one text message, get a buyer up $1 million and make, you know, $500,000 commission. It's just not reality. You know, the grind that you have to do to get deals done, transactions away, and again, making it feel good for the experience for all parties, you know, that is an art. And I think it's an art that's sort of dying away. And it's a sad indictment, I think, on our industry. But hey, look, it's a great industry. Property is a wonderful vehicle to invest in. It's certainly, I've seen a lot of people, helped a lot of people indeed become, you know, very wealthy myself through property investing. And so certainly as an industry, that's not going to change.
Ready to step up your property knowledge? Access powerful insights with us.
Certainly some people didn't like it. Certainly some people didn't want to go in it. And one of our many children sort of shed a few tears when we were going to be staying there one night about sleeping there. And as we only live 25 minutes away from it, yeah, we drove home back to the comfort of TV in a comfortable house. So look, if you don't want to stay there, you don't have to. But some mates of ours and ourselves and a couple of our younger kids stayed there one night. One of my old mates slept under the gallows. Some of our mates are as crazy as us.
Yeah. So, Yugi, I wonder what your experience was when you first saw this ex-jail. You started talking, having this conversation, and David saying, yeah, look, we could purchase this and turn it into a bit of a museum. What were some of your first initial thoughts and feelings?
Craig, at one stage in my life and my relationship with David, I thought that there would be a bit of calm after some of the big projects we were working on or big transformations, because we had taken on some other property before the jail and made, you know, large transformations of the spaces. And I think in 2018, we'd just come off the back of a really busy year, and we had this moment to sort of breathe. And I was already preempted that something big was on the horizon, because David started murmuring to me. He said, maybe we should look for something really unusual and interesting that we could put our own stamp on. So rather than a project that we were engaged by someone else to do, he was getting the itch, and he really wanted to do something big. It wasn't happenstance that the jail just fell onto our lap. We had reached out to a friend of ours who was a real estate agent and said, hey, just keep your eye out. If there's anything, you know, unusual, you sort of know us. We've embodied different heritage properties in the past. So she knew our tastes. She showed us a couple of places that didn't have that same, I don't want to keep using the word crazy, but I don't think it was as wild as perhaps we were looking for. And then one day she just said, guys, I've got something that might interest you, an historic prison in Castlemaine. And, you know, I closed my eyes and kind of went gulp and thought, I don't know whether I want to visit this place. Whereas David just went, yes, 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 yes. Can we meet you there this afternoon, or can we meet you there tomorrow morning? He was like a, you know, the red rag to the bull.
Know your property with us on the Real Estate Podcast.
So let's go to you, Lillian, in Dubai. A lot of rain, as I mentioned last week, that hit Dubai and the UAE.
It was crazy. You only have to go on social media to see thousands of videos of the roads flooded, water just pouring into people's homes, villas, apartments, shops. There's one crazy video of the Mall of the Emirates where water is just pouring into a shop. There's furniture flying off high-rise buildings, because it wasn't only rain, it was wind, really strong winds. There were lightning storms. Of course, the Burj got hit several times, and cars with water nearly to the roof. Personally, it was quite scary for me. I'm in a high-rise apartment and I had water leaking through the facade. The light chandeliers were swaying, and the building was making this creaking sound like a boat. And the final straw for me was actually when the kitchen doors flew open because of the swaying of the building. And I thought, I'm going to get out of here. And I went down to the ground floor lobby. There were about maybe 30 other residents there that were just hanging out because they were too scared and they just wanted to be with other people.
Yeah, that is such a scary situation. And Mario, let's come to you, because you have said to me in the past that it only rains a few times each year, but it is, of course, raining more than that now. And surely something has to be done about the fact that stormwater pipes were never, ever put into Dubai. And the problem is, when it rains, the water's got nowhere to go. They've got to do something about that.
Yeah, it does. I mean, I stand by what I say. Dubai doesn't get that much rainfall over the year. It is a few days. Actually, as I've been here over the years, it's increased. It's gone from, you know, a day or two to 4 or 5 days to, actually, when you add up the whole year, maybe into a week or two's worth of rain. But it does often lead to localized flooding and a bit of damage to buildings, especially villas and townhouses. But I put this down to the way of construction and drainage, or should I say lack of drainage, given that it rains only for a few, you know, days in the year.
Stop saying that. No, hang on. Stop saying that. It's raining more than that across a year.
Well, it is now, but honestly, yeah. The point I'm going to try and make here is that
dealing with the damage rather than spending the money in preventing the damage seems to be the order of the day, because Dubai doesn't have much in the way of drainage also. So there's nowhere for the rain to go. When we talk about the villas and townhouses, the construction of the flat roofs often, and they don't normally have slanted roofs, because there's no drainage, the water just sits there in a pond and eventually seeps through. And that's why you get water pouring into houses and villas. I mean, I don't know quite about the swaying of buildings. Mine was pretty solid, but it is scary times, because it's not something that you expect when you come to the desert.
And something's got to give, really, because one of the things that we talk about is the way that the local government has this ability to be able to swing from left to right rather quickly and adapt. We use that word pivot. Now, I'm sure, Mario, that they're going to be in their think tank saying, well, we are carrying on with the construction in Dubai. There are more and more buildings, which means that when there is a flooding event, more properties are going to be affected. So they are going to, at some point, they're going to have to address it. Otherwise, this is just going to be a mounting problem that is going to get worse.
Yeah, no, that I agree with. And sort of storm-proofing the properties is something that I think, as we go forward, they should do it from the source, from the construction, and actually use either better materials or better designs. This way, when it does rain, no matter how hard, it won't affect it as much as it has recently. From that point of view, we will see changes. For the older buildings, well, I guess it's then just damage limitation.
Yeah, and the cleanup is continuing, as you say. I understand that different heads of government entities have been spoken to on ways to be more prepared. Now, do you know anything more about that?
Yeah, it was reported that Dubai's Crown Prince, Sheikh Hamdan, has directed heads of government entities to develop a proactive plan to enhance Dubai's preparedness for dealing with unexpected weather conditions. Quite what these plans are have yet to be disclosed, but I'm sure they will include changes to the fabric of how property, especially villas and townhouses, are built. Drainage, for example, putting in storm drains is very important. Maybe building these properties on slightly elevated land. I mean, most of the roofs on villas are flat. And so I'm sure that in the future, roofs will have a 10 or perhaps a 20 degree tilt to allow for water to run into gullies and drain pipes.
Don't forget to subscribe. We have hundreds of episodes, all designed to help you better understand the constantly evolving and dynamically changing real estate property market.
It's huge, and you only have to look at two largest, well, it's actually not the two largest cities. You know, we usually do talk about it, Sydney and Melbourne, but actually in this case, of course, it's Sydney. Then it is Brisbane, I believe, after that. And then we've got
Adelaide.
Adelaide and then Melbourne, yes. But yeah, in Sydney, people are spending, you know, 59% of their income to service a new home. And in actual fact, it's closer to 60%. And yeah, you're right. Adelaide is 51% and Brisbane 48%. I mean, and all the cities, it is basically, it's half your income, essentially. In the past, what was considered to be an affordable portion of your income to spend on housing, whether that was rent or to pay your mortgage, supposed to be 30%, and even 20% really is what is meant to be affordable. So these places are just completely out of reach for so, so many people.
Yeah, and that kind of brings me on to the fact, and I've said this before, I'm just absolutely astonished at how resilient people are for somehow managing to keep all of the cards up in the air without crashing down around their ears, because it is such a significant amount of money. We know that there's a lot of people, I said this just a couple of days ago, sleeping in tents, they're sleeping in their cars. This is called homelessness, and there's a reason for it, and that is because of the affordability crisis that we currently live in.
That's right. And, you know, it's made so much worse by the fact that because it's a trickle-down effect, really, because what happens is that when house prices are so expensive, and when I say house prices, I mean property, so including units and townhouses as well, when they are so, so expensive that the people who, let's say 10 years ago, would usually have entered the property market, they would usually have bought their own home, they are now forced to rent. This report showed that there was a big increase in the number of people who have quite high incomes who have had to enter the rental market because they can't afford to buy. And so what happens is they're taking rentals away from people who earn less than them. And then those people are taking the less expensive rentals away from the people who earn less than them. And what ends up happening is you have an increase in homelessness or people sleeping rough, people couch surfing, all these sorts of things, because of the pinch at the top. It goes all the way down to the bottom and it becomes completely unsustainable. We know from this report, those people renting in the 25th percentile of incomes, and also they're trying to rent in the 25th percentile of rental properties, so they're not going for the median rent, they're going for the lower one, they're still paying 50% of their income, 54% of their income on rent, and that's a low income. It's just completely unsustainable.
We connect you to the best real estate information across Australia, The Real Estate Podcast.